Hey,
are you listening?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call
OTR.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. Johnson's Wax, Johnson's Car New, and Johnson's Self-Polishing Glow Coat present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball.
Hello, everybody.
A new series based on Isabel Scott Rorick's gay, sophisticated Mr. and Mrs. Cougar, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Our Miss Brooks is an English teacher at Madison High School. She can tell you everything you need to know about the present and past subjunctive, but she's not at all sure about the future. That is, her romantic future with biology teacher Philip Boynton.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
You bet your life. Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
Hey, that's me, Groucho Marx.
Now here is your guide to these adventures of mine.
Hey everyone, this is OTR Rob welcoming you to another edition of Fibber and Molly. This episode is from January 1st, 1946. The episode is entitled The Tall Story Contest. And this kind of harkens back to the beginnings of Fibber McGee and Molly. How Fibber and Molly started as a radio program has to do with the wife of one of the executives at Johnson's Wax, who had heard Fibber and Molly, or Jim Jordan and Marion Jordan, on Smackout, which was another show. And Smackout was about a grocery store owner who was smack out of everything when someone would ask for it. And she encouraged that the people, the executives at Johnson's Wax, listen to the program and tell her what she thought. And they heard a number of the shows, and they liked the homey style of Fibber and Molly, their humor, and how comfortable, you know, listening to the program was, and also how very humorous it was. And along at the same time that Johnson's Wax was considering Marion and Jim Jordan for what would be Fibber McGee and Molly, Jim Jordan and the writer of Fibber McGee and Molly got together, and there was a contest from the group of people called the National Liars Club. And the National Liars Club extended in a newspaper article to anyone who wanted to send in a tall story. And so Jim Jordan and Don Quinn got together, and they both together wrote a tall story, and they submitted it, and they won first place. And they knew they were on the right track as far as the idea of Fibber McGee and Molly. And that was the beginning of Fibber McGee and Molly, and it takes us to this episode of the Tall Story Contest. It's not exactly the same story that Jim Jordan and Don Quinn had put together, but it's another different type of story, and Fibber has to write it, and he's hoping to win, but he doesn't see how, and you get to listen to that. And that is My Favorite Husband from December 2nd, 1950. The episode is entitled Marrying Off Peggy Martin. So Liz Cooper gets the idea of trying to be a matchmaker for her girlfriend, Peggy Martin. Is that something that anyone does nowadays? Does anyone try and matchmake for a friend? Try and get them to go out with someone that they know? Does that happen in the 21st century? Let me know at otrrob50@gmail.com. I'd be glad to listen. And after that is Our Miss Brooks from November 26, 1950, the episode entitled The Woman Driver. But this is a lesson for all of you to not let someone like Stretch Snodgrass fix your car. And after that is The Halls of Ivy from January 30th, 1952. The episode is entitled The Track Star. And then on You Bet Your Life from May 24th, 1950, the episode is entitled Secret Word is Tree. Enjoy all of these, and I'll see you all back here next week. Enjoy.
Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. Down the country today, friends have been dropping in on other friends, exchanging New Year's greetings. It's a proud moment, isn't it, when your guests compliment you on the beauty of your home? Well, you can always count on a compliment like that if you use the wax method of housekeeping. Fact is, it's quite amazing how wax, genuine Johnson's wax, touches off the real beauty of the lovely things in your home. Waxed floors shine proudly with a new beauty. The wax polish gives a lovely luster to furniture and woodwork, too, and it brings out the beautiful grain. Picture frames and ornaments and leather articles grow lovelier each time you wax them. You see, Johnson Wax things have a satin smooth surface that doesn't collect dust, is easy to keep clean. And because of its protective qualities, a coating of wax adds to their length of life. Why not have a lovelier home in 1946 with Johnson's Wax? For non-professionals, there are three different approaches to typewriting. Hunt and peck, hope and hit, poke and pray. And here at 79 West Po Vista, we find the Squire combining the worst features of each. As we meet, Fibber McGee and Molly.
I can see why Remington makes guns as well as typewriters. If you don't type any better than I do, you can shoot yourself. Now, let's see what I got. One day in Africa during a kangaroo trapping expedition.
McGee, have you got time to help me? Oh, still at the typewriter, huh?
Yeah, and you know what? I now got two pinkies on each hand. My forefingers are worn down to the second knuckle.
What are you doing, writing yourself an anonymous letter?
No, I'm writing out my entry into a contest.
Oh, heavenly days. Another one? What is it this time?
I'm writing a story.
A story?
Yep.
Long or short?
Tall.
Tall, huh?
Yep. Tall story contest at the Elks Club. $100 first prize. Entry's got to be in by 5 o'clock tonight.
Well, good for you, dearie.
Yep.
You might as well cash in on that talent as give it away to your friends for free.
Yep.
Your only rival for tall stories is the Empire State Building.
That's what all the guys at the Elks Club say, too, and they've all got big bets on me to win.
Well, why not? You're a cinch.
Yep.
Mind if I read what you've written?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Tales Theory by Fibber, one half, dollar sign, Two smudges. McGree.
Better let me read it. My typing ain't very clean.
You're not kidding, sweetheart. This looks like you'd gone at the typewriter with four wooden mallets like a xylophone.
It says, Tall Story by Fibber McGee.
That's fine, dearie. Very good.
Well, wait till you hear it. There's more.
Oh, pardon me.
One day in Africa, during a kangaroo trapping expedition...
Well, aside from the fact there are no kangaroos in Africa, I think it's fine. Read the rest of it.
That's all I got. I can't think of a good yarn.
Oh, nonsense. You've got a million of them, dearie. How about the one you told the milkman this very morning?
What?
About how you used to drive a milk wagon and your horse was so smart, he not only knew all the customers, but used to read the newspapers to see if anybody knew had moved into the neighborhood?
Oh, they don't want true stories. Besides, there's something about writing them down on paper that defeats me. They don't look reasonable. I think I better start all over. Now, one day, when I was deep sea fishing at Acapulco. Hey, how do you spell Acapulco?
Where is it?
I don't know.
Well, make it Havana.
Oh.
You can copy that off your cigar band.
Good idea. Deep sea fishing at Havana, Florida.
Why, Havana's in Cuba.
Since when?
Well, that I couldn't say, dearie. I only know that...
Hello, Mrs. McGee. Oh, am I interrupting your work, Mr. McGee?
Oh, not at all, Alice. I'm never bothered by minor disturbances.
Well, I'm not a minor disturbance, Mr. McGee. Hmm? I was 21 last October.
Oh. Well, He's writing a tall story for the Elks Club contest, Alice.
Oh, creepers. Wonderful. Maybe he could even write a novel or a play or something sometime.
What do you mean I could write a play or a novel or something sometime? I got one almost finished right now. Oh. I'm calling it Life with My Father.
There is a play by that name, McGee. Very successful, too.
What? Life with My Father?
No, it's just called Life with Father.
Well, how do you like that? You think up an idea, somebody takes it, changes one word, and you got no legal protection whatsoever.
I think playwriting is horribly interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I go out once in a while with a fellow that he's a playwright. He's kind of a Noel coward.
He is, eh?
Yes. He'd like to write like Noel, but he's afraid.
I'll never forget one time in New York, the Theater Guild come to me and asked me to write a show for him.
I suppose Elmer Rice was busy at the time, being thrown at a wedding party.
Well, sir.
I was a kind of a Broadway playboy in them days, which is why they wanted me to write a Broadway play, I suppose.
Well, Max.
They offered me $100,000 and a tryout in Washington, D.C.
Would that be called capital gain, dearie?
It would have if they'd ever seen it. But I found out just in time they wanted a play to be called Alabama so they could pay me off in Confederate money. So I nixes the DLC and they got a kid named Hammerstein to do one called Oklahoma. I understand it's going to make expenses, too.
Make expenses? They sell tickets for it in jewelry stores.
Well, I'll let you get to work, Mr. McGee. I've got to get downtown anyway. I have a luncheon date with Geraldine.
Who's Geraldine?
Oh, Geraldine is the mounted policeman who directs traffic at 14th and Oak Street on the big brown horse's sister.
Oh, I see.
Well, good luck with it, Mr. McGee.
Billy Mills and the orchestra and two guitars.
Thank you.
Dad.
Well, how are you coming along with your tall story?
Oh, terrible. I can't think of anything to write. I had a wonderful start on this one, too, but it petered out.
What was it?
It was about the time I flew a balloon over Mount Vesuvius while it was erupting.
Oh, why, that sounds very interesting. Why didn't you go on with it?
I couldn't. The balloon caught fire in the third line, and I got killed. I only had more imagination. I could win this thing hands down.
Come in. Oh, hello there, Mrs. Carstairs. Do come in.
How do you do, my dear? Working on the typewriter, Mr. McGee?
Who, me? Oh, no, no, Karsty. I'm teaching a sea lion to play the 1812 overture on a police whistle. And if you'll pardon my mentioning it, your skirt is split down the middle.
This, Mr. McGee, is a divided skirt.
That's what I said.
I have just come from a horseback ride in the park.
Oh, I've seen you riding, Millicent. And I must say you have a wonderful seat on a horse. McGee.
You quite an equestrianarian, Karsty?
Well, I rather fancy that I am, Mr. McGee. I have taken several blue ribbons at horse shows.
Judges nearsighted, or were you whinnying at the time?
Now, McGee, don't be so rude.
Oh, I know he's just joking, my dear. As a matter of fact, Mr. McGee, when Roy Rogers had his last rodeo at Madison Square Garden, he made me a splendid offer.
My goodness, did he really, Millicent? What was his offer?
$10 for my hat. He said it frightened Trigger.
Used to be quite a horseman myself, Carsey. Had quite a string of polo ponies at one time.
Really? What happened to them?
The string broke.
I even used to ride bareback in a circus with him. Funny thing happened in connection with that, too, recently, too. I happened to be in Indianapolis. You know Indianapolis, Karsty?
Oh, indeed I do. Uh-huh. It was named after one of my ancestors, an Indian who'd gone to Annapolis.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, Well, you know the big circle down there in Indianapolis? Well, I was walking along there one day, and I seen two of the horses from my old circus act from 20 years ago. They were harnessed to a beer truck. Well, sir, the minute they seen me, they started snorting for joy. They tossed their heads and arched their necks and started galloping around the circle, round and round and round.
Oh, wasn't that delightful? I suppose it had been years since they'd seen a clown.
So what does I do but I throws off my overcoat, steps out of my shoes, and leaps onto their backs. And for 20 minutes we galloped around that circle, me jumping on and off, turning triple somersaults, handsprings, and flip-flops.
Well, after 20 years, I imagine a lot of your flips were flops, huh?
But I forgot I didn't have any rosin on my feet, and I slipped on one of their rumps, and whammo, everything went black.
Oh, were you knocked unconscious, Mr. McGee? I mean, more so than usual?
No, I wasn't, Karsty. I flew through the air right into a Keep Our City Clean box. And the lid fell on me.
Hasn't himself here had the most fascinating experiences, Millicent?
Simply astounding, my dear. Sometime when you have a free hour, Mr. McGee, I should like to hear more of your circus stories.
Why, sure, Karsty, anytime. Shall I give you a ring?
Well, under the circumstances, give me 3 rings. Mm. Good day, my dear.
Why not use that, McGee?
Huh? Use what?
Use that circus story as your tall story for the Elks Club contest.
Oh, my gosh, kiddo, I can't do that.
Why not?
Why, those horses may still be living. I wouldn't want to embarrass them. Boy, this is a tough assignment, you know. I can't dream up any fantastic stories.
Well, now, you'd better, McGee.
Well,
if all those men at the Elks have bet big money on you.
Yeah, that scares me, too.
You know what? I talked to Mrs. Toops on the phone, and she said her husband said all the Elks are betting their teeth on you.
Oh, my gosh, I don't
know. Sure, they say you're a 3-to-1 shot. Or 3-to-1 to get shot, I forget which.
Well, doggone it, I just can't think of any wild yarns. I sit here and stare at this blank paper and nothing
comes. Hello, folks.
Oh, hi, Junior.
Hello, Mr. Wilcox.
Feliz año nuevo, amigo.
No, thanks, Junior. We haven't used up the old can yet.
No, McGee, that was Happy New Year in Spanish, I think. Oh. Wasn't it, Mr. Wilcox?
Sure. I picked up quite a bit of Spanish when I was deep sea fishing down in Acapulco.
Deep sea fishing in Acapulco, eh?
Yeah.
You're just the guy I wanted to see, Junior. How do you spell it?
D-E-E-P-S-E-A-F-I-S-H?
No, he means Acapulco.
Oh, I don't know. I never paid any attention to the spelling. You see, I was down there with a bunch of Johnson Wax salesmen.
I'll bet you were, Waxy. And I'll bet all you sportsmen made an agreement not to talk shop on the whole trip, too, didn't you?
We sure did, Mac. For 5 whole days, not a word was said about fishing. All we talked about was Johnson's wax.
Ah, it's a great topic in the tropics.
Yes, we swapped experiences about how we'd sold way over our quotas of Johnson's wax. How housewives loved it because it gave their homes that immaculate shining appearance.
Yeah.
How it made housekeeping so much easier because dust and dirt can't cling to a Johnson waxed surface.
I was deep sea fishing down in Acapulco once.
And how a proud housekeeper kept finding new uses for Johnson's wax. Floors, furniture, woodwork, picture frames, lampshades, window shades, Venetian blinds, luggage, banisters.
We were trolling for tuna, you see. We were trolling for tuna, and I had about a half a mile of line out.
And with your line, you could spare it.
Well, sir, suddenly I got a bite. I scratches it quick, and then like a flash... like a flash, I reels in. It was a terrific battle. But finally, I reaches over the side with my gaff, and what do you suppose I'd caught? A guy in a bathing suit with water wings on.
How exasperating.
Not at all, as it turned out. I yanks the guy on board, and I says, I'm sorry, bud, I thought you were a tuna. He says, I am. I'm a piano tuna. Chuck's just a holiday.
Well, excuse me, pal. I've got to get going. I just stopped in to see how you were coming with your entry for the Elk's Tall Story Contest.
Well, he's a little discouraged about it, Mr. Wilcox.
Yeah, I can't seem to think of a thing, Junior.
Well, keep pitching, Mac. And remember, the deadline is 5 o'clock.
Ain't that awful, Molly? The deadline is 5 o'clock.
Well, how much have you got written?
All I got so far is this. An amazing thing happened to me when I was a cabin boy on a 12-masted schooner bound round the horn.
Bound round the horn?
Yeah. I got my nose all cut up in the fright and I had it all bandaged up.
Well, what's the story of the 12-masted schooner?
I'm darned if I know. I just don't seem to be able to make up imaginary stuff. Maybe I better start fresh and... Oh, my gosh. How can a guy get his work done? Our threshold has been crossed more times today than Southern California's goal line. Come in.
Oh, hello there, Dr. Gamble. Do come in.
Hello, Molly. Good afternoon, Gargoyle.
For a doctor, Arrowsmith, you've got an awful ignorant way of pronouncing gargle. What can we do for you? Break a leg?
No, I'm a committee of one sent by the more sporting members of the Elks Club to pick up your story, McGee. Got it ready?
Oh, heavenly day.
Gee whiz, Doc, I'm in a spot. No kidding. I haven't been able to think of a thing. My imagination is drier than a Kansas tea room.
You better think of something, Bilge Pump, for I know 7 underworld characters, including me, who will tear your head off and throw it in your face. Personally, I have wagered $65 in folding money, 4 appendectomies, 2 adhesions, and a basal metabolism on you. Go on, concentrate.
Do what the doctor says, McGee. Concentrate.
Maybe he doesn't know how to concentrate.
Certainly I know how to concentrate. My gosh, I spent 6 years in India studying to be a faker, didn't I?
Yeah, and 40 years in this country.
Betcha. I learned how to sit on a board full of nails all day long and just concentrate.
Didn't it hurt, McGee?
Not after I learned the secret of how to do it. Then I could sit on them nails all day and never feel a twinge.
And what was the secret, Master? Mind over matter or a heavy girdle over the derriere?
It was very simple. Just drive the nails into the board and flatten them out. It's only the points that hurt you.
Simple when you know the trick, isn't it?
You must show us the Indian rope trick sometime, Faker. I'll buy the rope if you'll climb up it and disappear. For good. And furthermore...
I'll get it.
Hello, Gamble speaking. Who? Oh, yes. Yes. Well, I'll be over there as soon as I can, Ray. In the meantime, take 2 5-grain headache tablets and apply cold compresses. And don't worry about it, Ray. You're not the first person who's lost one. Bye.
Lost what, Doctor?
A weekend. McGee, do you know what time it is? 4:30. Where's that tall story?
Oh, my gosh, Doc, I can't... Well, gee whiz, this simply isn't
McGee,
my...
McGee, they're all depending on you, though.
You better get with it, Bugface, or your life won't be worth 10 cents worth of Hiroshima real estate.
Well, doggone it, I don't know what to do. Hey.
Huh?
Wait a minute. Yeah, I do, too. I know what to do.
Well, write it out quick, boy.
Good for you, McGee.
I'll fix him.
Why, you leave these things to last minute anyhow.
Look at how fast he's going.
You have it to do.
There.
Hurry up. Give it here, McGee. Come on, give it to me.
Wait a minute. Where's an envelope?
Here, McGee.
Thanks. Okay, Doc, give him that.
Thanks, son. I knew you'd come through. I listen in to WVIS at 6:30. They'll announce the winner.
I knew he could do it, Doctor.
So did I. He's got more tall tales than a herd of giraffes.
Bye now.
The King's Men sing I Don't Care If I Never Go to Bed.
I love music and crowded places. I love people and such. I love singing and smiling faces. Love to stay awake too much. Oh, I don't care if I never go to bed. Never go to bed. Never go to bed. I don't care if I never go to bed. Cause I'm having such a darn good time. I don't care if I never hit the hay. Never hit the hay. Never hit the hay. I don't care if I never hit the hay, cause the man is young and I feel fine. It must be somebody's birthday or anniversary, and that's a very good reason to sing this song with me. Oh, I don't care if I never go to bed, never go to bed, never go to bed. I don't care if I never go to bed, cause I'm having such a darn good time. Pardon me, I mean, never sleep a wink. I don't care cause I'm feeling in the pink. Having such a darn good time. I don't care if I never snooze a day. Pardon me, I mean, never take a snooze. I don't care cause I'm doing what I choose. Having such a darn good time. I won't adore all the ring bells. I'm feeling young and gay. I want to spot the high hits and I can dance away. I don't care if I never let you go. Pardon me, I mean, this is what I said. I don't care if I never go to bed. Having such a darn good time.
Gloomy about, McGee. You came through with a tall tale, didn't you?
No, I didn't. I came through with mine between my legs.
What do you mean?
I didn't send the Elsa story. I just sent my apologies. Told them I just couldn't handle it, that's all.
Oh, heavenly days. All those people who'd bet on you, too.
I know, I know. I feel like a dog. But gee whiz, Molly, I just can't sit down at a typewriter and deliberately prevaricate. Somehow, it just don't seem... it's honest, somehow.
Well, cheer up, pet. My goodness. Come in. Oh, Mayor Latrivia, do come in, Your Honor.
Oh, thank you, my dear. Hello, McGee.
Hi, Latrivia.
Say, I have some good news for you folks. Remember Wallace Wimple?
My goodness, yes.
You mean little Wally Wimp? You mean the henpecked little guy that when he was married, Frankenstein gave the bride away?
Yes, that's the lad. I just got word that he's out of the service and will be back in Wistful Vista on the 15th of January.
Oh,
good. Very well.
It seems that the Navy finally saved up enough points to get rid of him.
Oh, oh my, it'll be nice to see him again.
2 weeks from today, eh? My gosh, that's...
By the way, McGee, did you send the Elks your tall story for the contest?
No. I guess I kind of fell down on the assignment, Latriv. I went into it real enthusiastic, too. I was going to whip out a yarn and have all the other contestants green with ivy. I had...
You mean envy, dear. Huh? People don't turn green with ivy.
Oh, no? You mean I never told you about the kid I went to school with? Little Eddie Creeper? The poor kid that was working his way through school.
What about him, McGee?
Well, he got so hungry he'd eat the leaves off the vines on the chemistry building just to keep from starving.
Well, if he wanted to browse, why didn't he go over to the library building?
The bigger leaves on the chemistry of the building, it was older. Well, sir, he ate so many of them leaves, he started turning green with ivy, you see.
Oh, dear.
I suppose you're going to tell us he came home one night potted.
No, the thing was, Latrivia, he ate so many of them ivy leaves, he got a peculiar habit of trying to climb the wall of the chemistry building.
Oh.
Every spring, right after the rainy season, he'd do it. We found out later his father had been one of the Virginia creepers. Creepers. Then Then a kind of a tragic thing happened.
I know. He was attacked by caterpillars?
No. No. It seems that one of the botany professors, I think it was a botany professor. Well, what's the study of plant life called, the trivia?
The National Labor Board.
Mr. Mayor, what do you mean?
Never mind, never mind. Anyway, they discovered there was no nourishment in ivy leaves, and when this kid heard that, he fell right off the wall onto his history notebook. It weakened him so much, they had to feed him Vigoro and tie him to a trellis to hold him up for the graduation exercise.
That's a very interesting story, McGee. Is that the one you sent to the Elks Club?
Well, no, it isn't, Your Honor.
I'll probably have to resign from the Elks, Latrivia. I wouldn't be able to show up there from now on without getting a hot foot every time I sat down.
What's a hot foot?
Well, that's where you stick a match in the sole of a guy's shoe without him knowing it and light it.
It's a stupid practical joke, Mrs. McGee, dedicated to the proposition that all men should be cremated equal. But about your entry in the contest, McGee, I certainly hope you...
Heavenly days, look what time it is. Time for the broadcast. Turn the radio on, McGee.
Oh, okay. Not that I want to hear it, except out of morbid curiosity.
McGee, I'm curious to know just exactly
quiet,
what you wrote.
Quiet, Mr. Mayor. Oh, quiet. Listen.
And now for the announcement of the first prize winner in the Wistful Vista Elks Club annual tall story contest. The winner, who will receive a check for $100, is Mr. Fibber McGee of 79 Wistful Vista.
What? Why are you?
How on earth could he do that?
Mr. McGee's prize-winning entry consisted simply of this brief note, and I quote, huh? Tall Story Committee, gentlemen... I'm sorry, but I just don't seem to be able to sit down and deliberately tell a falsehood. Well, to anyone who knows Mr. McGee, this will be recognized as the most fantastic whopper of all time. Congratulations, Mr. McGee, and now we return you to the...
Well, I'll be a happy new year.
In the coming year, Fibber McGee and Molly will most certainly be making many new friends. Friends who perhaps will be using Johnson's Glow Coat on their floors and linoleum for the first time. Well, now any one of our many old friends could tell these ladies what a pleasing experience they have in store. With self-polishing Glow Coat, you can give your floors and linoleum the gleaming luster of a wax finish with practically no work at all. Glow Coat needs no rubbing or buffing. It's self-polishing. You simply apply and let dry. In 20 minutes, come back and you'll find even old linoleum gleaming with a brand new beauty. It's amazing the difference it makes. And of course, because Glow Coat protects the surface from wear, new linoleum stays like new, both in bright appearance and in the way it wears. Yes, our new friends have a pleasant surprise coming when they first use Johnson's self-polishing Glow Coat in the coming new year.
Ladies and gentlemen, when your country is at war, you naturally offer it your money, your services, and, if necessary, your life. But when the war is over, it's every person's privilege, yes, even duty, to think of himself again, his work, and his future.
The United States Merchant Marine, which made such a wonderful record of work done and heroic missions accomplished, offers a wonderful opportunity. It wants and needs you experienced officers and men who have been to sea, men with certificates. If you're looking for a job with a great future, write or wire collect to Merchant Marine, Washington, 25, D.C., giving your rating and address.
And if you've been on a well-earned holiday, we urge you to return to your ship. You won't be the first one who was smart enough to go back on the water after a celebration. Good night.
Good night, all, and Happy New Year.
Next Tuesday night. This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the Johnson Wax people in Racine, Wisconsin, and Brantford, Ontario, who join all of us in wishing you a very happy new year. Good night. This is NBC.
National Broadcasting Company.
It's time for My Favorite Husband, the gay family series starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning as Liz and George Cooper, two people who live together and like it. And now let's look in on the Coopers. It's afternoon, and we find Liz Cooper entertaining her Tuesday Bridge Club. Throughout the room, there's a quiet concentration on the cards.
One club.
Say, did you get a load of Peggy Martin's dress at the band Saturday?
One what? Yeah, what there was of it. One no trump. How do you suppose they held it up anyway?
Two diamonds, who knows? All I know is every man in the room was waiting for her to exhale.
Don't I know it? Rudolph's eyes buzzed out like a bullfrog with an overactive thyroid.
And the way all her husbands fought to dance with it, it was sticky. Well, at least my chest didn't ask it again.
How could he when you tied his coat to the back of the chair?
Well, it kept him from making a fool of himself over her. Like some other people's husbands I could name.
Marge, are you referring to George?
Well, if the suit fits.
George did not dance with her once.
No, but he sure intermissioned her on the terrace.
Listen, Marge.
Girls, are we going to play bridge or not?
But, Iris, don't you hear what they're saying?
I hear them. But it's getting to have an awfully familiar ring. Every time we play bridge, we discuss the same thing.
Peggy Martin. Well, why not? She's the biggest female wolf in town.
Yeah.
I don't get it. Every time there's a club dance, all the men are hanging around Peggy Martin. What's the plot that we haven't got?
No husband.
Hey, wait a minute. That's it. That's the clue to the situation.
Sure. If she were married, they wouldn't give her a tumble.
Exactly. So there's only one thing to do. We'll have to find her a husband.
Well, I'll make the sacrifice and give her Rudolph.
Yeah, well, thanks anyway, Iris, but Rudolph isn't
Don't
exactly...
Don't go on, girl. I know what you mean.
Well, I don't know where we'll find him, but for self-preservation, it's up to all of us to find Peggy Martin a man of her own.
Oh, there you are.
Hi, George. How's my little husband tonight?
Liz, I hope you don't mind. I brought someone home to dinner.
George Cooper.
He's in the living room.
Why didn't you call?
Well, I didn't have time. Look, he's an important client of the bank, and he's thinking of building a women's clothing factory here in town.
But we're having stew. Katie made some leftovers.
Oh, listen, any home-cooked meal would taste good to him. He's a traveling man and a bachelor, and he eats out all the time.
Well, I'm not going to serve stew to a bachelor?
Yes.
Is he by any chance tall, dark, and handsome?
He is, and he's loaded.
Oh.
And I recognize that I want to play Cupid look in your eyes.
Ooh.
Just keep your grubby little paws off him. No matchmaker.
But he sounds like such a goodie.
No matchmaker.
Oh.
Why is it that every married woman makes it her personal business to marry off every single man?
Whatever do you mean?
You know what I mean. Look, if a man is lucky enough to still be single...
What?
Well, I didn't mean it that way. You know how I feel about marriage.
Well, that's better.
Yeah, if a man is smart enough to
what?
Still be... Well, there must be some word to describe what I mean.
The word is stupid.
All right. If a guy is stupid enough to be single, leave him be. After all, ignorance is bliss.
I don't like the way that sounds.
Well, anyway, you leave him alone. Now, come on, I'll introduce you.
Oh, all right. but he sounded just right for Peggy Martin.
You let Peggy Martin get her own husband.
I wouldn't mind if she got her own. She's getting everybody else's.
Oh, sorry to keep you waiting, Herb. This is my wife, Liz. Liz, this is Herb Paxton.
How do you do, Mrs. Cooper?
How do you do? Ooh, Mr. Paxton.
Well, I've just been admiring your home, Cooper.
Thank you.
It just goes to show what can happen when you have a woman around the house.
Yes. Yes. Dude, we have one of the best maids in town.
George.
Mrs. Cooper, I hope you won't mind having an unexpected guest for dinner like this.
Mind? Of course not. What's the wife for?
That's a good question.
On your next trip to town, Mr. Paxton, why don't you bring your wife along?
Liz, that's all right, Cooper. I don't have a wife.
Oh, what a pity. A handsome, charming man like you.
Paxton, I certainly hope you see your way clear to building your factory here in town.
Well, everything so far looks very favorable.
Mr. Paxton, could I ask you something?
Why, certainly.
Liz, we're trying to talk business.
Oh, this is about business, George.
Well, okay.
If you should build your plant in this town, Mr. Paxton, that's the business part of it, George. Did it ever occur to you how lonely it would be to come home after a hard day's work and not have anyone waiting at the door for you?
Oh, I don't have to worry about that.
Oh, you don't?
No. I've got a wonderful little Cocker Spaniel.
Well, let's go into dinner. Hello?
Iris?
Yes? Put away your harpoon. I've located your fish.
Who is this girl?
A business friend. A business friend of George's. He's luscious and loaded.
Did you arrange for him to meet Peggy Martin?
Not yet. George wouldn't let me. But I did find out he lives at the Sheridan Falls Hotel, and I'm going down there and take care of that little matter right now.
Oh, Liz, you get the Bridge Club Achievement Award for this.
But I don't want any award. If you see him, you'd realize this is fun.
Well, if you're too busy, Liz, I could take some of my valuable time to get out.
Oh, no, you don't. I'm making this sacrifice.
Well, let me know what happens, girl.
Yeah, I'll buzz you the minute I get back and give you the scoop.
Come in.
Hello, Mr. Paxton.
Well, hello, Mrs. Cooper. Come in.
I bet you never expected to see me here, did you?
Not so soon, anyway. Sit down.
Thank you. Mr. Paxton.
Yes, Mrs. Cooper.
I got to thinking that here you are in a strange town and you don't know a soul.
Oh, you're so right, Liz.
Liz? Mr. Paxton, I thought that what you need is an attractive woman to show you around the town. Would you like that?
You know I would. What about your husband?
Oh, you don't understand.
Oh, I think I do.
I was talking about someone else.
Sure, sure.
I mean it. I want you to meet one of the girls in our bridge club.
You don't need to pretend with me, Liz.
Pretend? Now look.
Oh, I read that look in your eye last night, and you kept trying to get your husband out of the room so you could talk to me.
I can't. Now you stand back there. Mr. Paxton, I did want to talk to you, but it was about this other girl, Peggy Martin. I think you two should know each other.
Peggy Martin.
Yes, yes, you believe me, don't you?
Of course.
Oh.
When do you want to meet me, Peggy?
Now, Mr. Paxton.
Oh, you can't fight things like this, Liz. This was meant to be.
Please, stay away from me. You stay on that side of the table. I only want you to meet Peggy Martin.
Be honest, Liz.
You don't believe believe it'd be on the corner of Main and Elm at 5 o'clock tonight.
Wow. All right. That's
okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Paxton.
Oh, wow. Wow!
All the tough
grapes.
Hello?
Iris, this is Liz.
Well, give, girl, dear.
Oh, nothing juicy. I hit a temporary snag. I had the date set with Paxton for 5 o'clock on the corner of Main and Elm. I just called Peggy Martin and she's out of town.
Oh. What are you going to do?
I called him back, but I can't get in touch with him. I'll have to go down to Main and Elm myself and tell him it's all off.
Well, Miss Paxton, I guess that's all the business we have to do today.
Yeah.
Just in time, too. I have to pick up my date in 15 minutes.
A date?
One of our local girls?
Yeah.
Who is she?
Well,
oh, come on. I know everyone in town. Who's the lucky girl?
Well, I guess I can trust you not to blab it around. She's just married.
Oh, no.
Yes. She came right down to my hotel and begged me to go out with her.
Oh, you devil.
She kept telling me she's really making the date for a friend.
Oh, that old dodge.
I gotta get going. Which way is Main and Elm?
That's 3 blocks down and 2 blocks to the left. Stay here, Paxton. I don't suppose you'd want to tell me her name, would you?
Atterbury.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have asked.
Well, I better be going now. I don't want to keep the little lady waiting. Goodbye.
Right. Oh, this is too good to keep. George, boy.
Yes, Mr. Atterbury.
George. Paxton just left here, boy. He's got a date.
What about it?
She's married.
No kidding. Who is it?
I didn't ask him.
Oh. Of course not.
Come on, boy.
Come on where?
We're going to take a little ride past the corner of Main and Elm. And see you it is.
Isn't that being a little bit sneaky?
Sneaky? It's despicable. Get your hat. Let's go.
There's Paxton. He's talking to her.
Oh, she's the one, all right. Drive slowly, George.
Yeah, I am.
Now she's turning around.
Yeah, now we can see her.
Now we... Oh, God! George, you idiot, you crumpled your fender.
Oh, that's nothing to what I'm going to do to Paxton. Oh, that big home wrecker.
Oh, you were such a good account, too. Well, go ahead, boy.
Oh, there's George. What are you doing here?
I'll talk to you later.
Well, Mr. Atterbury.
Shame!
All right, Paxton, put up your cooper.
George!
Now, listen, Cooper, let's not be hasty.
I'll try this for size.
Look at George.
Nice work, boy. You really crumpled his fender.
And that's the whole story, George, and I swear it.
Well?
You believe me, don't you?
Well, I guess it does make sense.
And George, I was wrong for trying to be a match maker.
Well, honey, I'm sorry I died.
Well, I'm kind of glad you're so jealous. You know, you're cute when you're jealous. Sparks come out of your eyes.
Thanks.
Kiss me, George.
Thank you.
bet Paxton can't kiss like that.
I should say he can't. I mean, I'll bet he can. Nobody can.
Ah, well, that's better. And about this playing Cupid, I want your solemn promise to keep your cute little nose out of other people's business.
I promise. I'm retiring my nose from active poking.
Good. Come on, give me a kiss.
George Cooper, you're a big stinker.
Hey, what's the matter with you?
Well, it's so much fun making up with you. I'm trying to start another fight. What have you do?
Well, girl, how's the Paxton caper coming along?
Iris, I told you this morning, I promised George I'd have nothing more to do with getting Paxton married.
I know. What are you going to call him?
I'm not. Iris, I'm through with meddling. It gets me into too much trouble.
Oh, Benedict Arnold. You're ratting out at the crucial moment.
What do you mean?
I just saw Peggy Martin at the beauty parlor. She's seen Paxton and she's dying to meet him. Black eye and all.
Well, there's nothing I can do about it. My nose is tied behind me.
I told Peggy to be at the hotel at 5 o'clock, and you're the only one who knows, Paxton.
I'm sorry, Iris. I won't break my word.
Well, you don't have to.
What do you mean?
Just go along and introduce them to me. I'll take care of the rest.
Well...
You won't be breaking your word.
Well, all I'll say is Mr. Paxton meet Mrs. Atterbury and not another word. Here's Paxton's room, 459. Now remember, Iris, when we go in there, it's your show. I'm just the MC.
Well, don't worry, girl. Leave everything to me.
Hello, Mr. Paxton.
Mrs. Cooper.
Go away, Mrs. Cooper, please. I only have one eye left.
Mr. Paxton, this has nothing to do with me. I want to introduce you to my friend, Mrs. Atterbury.
I saw her. Never mind.
Please, she has something important to say to you.
Mr. Paxton, this has all been a mistake. Ooh, he's a dreamboat.
Iris.
Mr. Paxton, all Liz wanted you to do was to have a date with Peggy Martin. Honestly.
You mean that was on the level?
Yes, I was just down there to tell you she couldn't make it that night.
Well, I certainly owe you an apology, Mr. Cooper.
Well, I guess it did look strange. Peggy's down in the lobby now waiting for you. She's a doll.
Well... the least I can do is go down and meet her.
Attaboy, Greenbow. She's wearing a red carnation.
Okay. Today I was just unpacking a whole new line of the negligee samples. Take a look, see how you like them.
Right. Oh, well.
If you see anything that fits you, you can have it wholesale. I'll be right back.
Well, don't hurry. I want to try on every one of these.
Okay.
Oh, Iris, look at this one. Black tip on pendant lace.
Yeah. And look at this. Pink silk with a marabou thread.
Ooh.
Look, I'll go in the bedroom and try these on, and you stay in here.
Okay. Iris, what? The way I see it, everybody wins. We get rid of Peggy Martin. Peggy gets Dreamboat. The bank gets the plant's business. Sheridan Falls gets the plan, and we get our clothes wholesale for the rest of our lives.
George, I hope you don't mind my insisting you come down here to the hotel and apologize to Paxton. No, I wanted to come over anyway. I'm really pretty ashamed of the way I jumped to conclusions.
Oh, here's his room, 459.
Well, why don't you knock? Well, I wonder if we're not being a bit indiscreet, George. What do you mean? Well, after all, Paxton is a gay, carefree bachelor. He may not be alone. Well, shall we go back to the lobby and call?
Oh, no, I guess so.
again?
Mr. Paxton, I broke in!
Liz, what are you doing here? And in that outfit?
Now, George, before you get mad, I want you to know I can get this wholesale.
Well, that's nice to know. Temper.
Liz, is that Greenbow? Tell him not to come into the bedroom.
Oh, doppelganger!
Yeah, I'm all right now. It's
Papa Rudolph. What are you doing here?
For shame! How can you do this, Lotus Bug?
Temper, Mr. Atterbury, temper.
Oh, shut up!
Now, if you'll just give us a chance to explain, we came down here...
We don't need any explanation, please. You, here, in a negligee. Oh, you must be out of your mind.
Iris, you, here, in a negligee. He must be out of his mind.
And I wouldn't break my word to you.
A likely story.
He's downstairs with her now. That's exactly what happened.
Oh, sure.
Now, let's have the truth.
What?
The real truth.
Now, just a minute.
Wait a minute, Iris. All right, George. If that's what you want, that's what we'll give you.
Well, it's about time. Proceed.
Well, for a long time now, Iris and I have been getting sick and tired of having you two for husbands.
What?
Yeah. What fun is it for two gorgeous creatures like us being tied to two fat old fogies like you?
Old? Fat? Now, just a minute.
Oh, go on, Liz. I can't wait to see what happens.
Well, when Paxton came into town, we realized here was the chance of a lifetime. So we threw a few things in a suitcase and came down here for our big, wild fling.
Yes? Yeah!
And later on this evening, the three of us are going to fly to Mexico City.
Mexico City!
Hello. Hello, Mrs. Atterbury. Mr. Atterbury.
Oh. Well, will you tell your wife and Cooper's wife I won't be back for a while? I'm going to have a drink with Peggy Moss.
Hey, she's all right.
Oh, yeah. Well, goodbye. Well, George, boy, that was Paxton. I guess the girls were telling the truth the first time.
Oh, now you believe it.
Yes. Get ready. We'll take you home.
Just a minute. For being such doubting Thomases, I think you should buy us these negligees.
Well, how much are they?
$129.50. $137.50.
Just a minute. George, can you come here? George. Yeah, I think so. Well, goodbye, girls.
Goodbye.
Yes, we talked it over, and it's cheaper to let you go to Mexico City.
You have been listening to My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning. Bob Lamond speaking. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education. ¶¶
Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay, and Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks under the direction of Al Lewis. Well, there's no doubt about it. The hopped-up jalopy has replaced the tandem bicycle in most of our high schools. And occasionally, reckless driving poses a problem to the faculty. Our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High, became acquainted with this problem last week.
It was on Tuesday, to be exact, and I became intimately acquainted with the problem. As I was crossing the street, a wild-eyed kid bore down on me in something that looked like a torpedo with four wheels and a raccoon tail. If I hadn't been wearing my gym shoes, I would now be welded to the grill of a Model A. At breakfast Wednesday morning, I discovered that Mrs. Davis, my landlady, was concerned about this problem, too.
I tell you, Connie, it's getting so dangerous that a body doesn't want to walk in the street anymore.
Not if it has a head on it, it doesn't.
The poor traffic cops have their hands full.
Well, the police can't correct this recklessness by themselves. We've got to do something about it in our schools. Say, how do you like this for an idea?
Wonderful, Connie. It's just what this town...
But I haven't told it to you yet.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I've been seeing a lot of my sister Angela lately. She's so absent-minded, poor dear.
Yes, I know, Mrs. Davis, but please listen to this. I'm going to suggest to Mr. Conklin that we form our own student police force. It would be made up of students who drive their own cars, and they'd have the power to arrest anyone who violated traffic laws.
That sounds good. It's just like self-government, isn't it?
It's more like self-preservation.
Another thing you should do is to start a class in driving at Madison.
You might have something there, Mrs. Davis. You know, Clay City High has a driving class.
I know it. And their principal, Jason Brill, is Mr. Conklin's arch rival. Why, he even donated his own car for the class.
I remember reading about it. Mr. Conklin should certainly go for my ideas, if only to show he's as progressive-minded as Mr. Brill. Oh, that's Walter Denton. He's driving me down to school. I'll just be a minute, Walter. See you tonight, Mrs. Davis.
All right, Connie. Now, don't forget to tell Mr. Conklin your ideas about the student police force and the driving class.
I won't.
And remember our safety motto.
Which one is that?
Which one is what?
Our safety motto.
Oh, that's a dandy one.
Yes, it should catch on in no time. Well, goodbye again, Mrs. Davis.
Yes, indeed.
Good morning, Walter.
Good morning to you, oh, fairest of the faculty. Did you notice anything different today?
Different? Let's see. Oh, yes. You've got jam on your face instead of peanut butter.
I don't mean about me. I mean about my car. Take a good look.
Well, for heaven's sake, who stole your fenders? And what are those outlandish pipes sticking out for?
I know you're not very mechanical-minded, Miss Brooks, so I'll make it very simple. Stretch Snodgrass and I hopped it up in auto school, shop at school. You see, first of all, we dropped the chassis springs, we put in a lightweight camshaft, two Winfield downdraft pots, and a four-port Riley super-speed high-compression head. Do you follow?
Not quite. What did you say after you said, I'll make it very simple?
Just hop in, and I'll show you how this heap of heavenly hot iron can dig out. Comfy, Miss Brooks?
Snug as a bug in the engine room of a destroyer. My legs are sort of tangled up with these pipes and valves, but what's this strange thing sticking out of the engine that looks like a thermos jug?
It's a thermos jug. I strap my lunch to the engine because Mother likes me to have a hot meal these days.
Well, nothing like a nice bologna and battery acid sandwich. Let's get started, Walter.
Hang on, Miss Brooks. I'll turn her over.
Thank you.
Connie Brooks to control tower. Connie Brooks to control tower. Please give us the clearance. We're taking off for the next airport. Over and out and across the river and into the trees.
Well, here we are, Miss Brooks. From your place to Madison High in exactly 4 minutes and 9 seconds. Say, Miss Brooks, you look a little blue. What's wrong?
Nothing's wrong. What color do you get when you hold your breath for 4 minutes and 9 seconds?
I didn't mean to frighten you. Uh-oh. Mr. Conklin just got out of his car up ahead. I better park somewhere else. He can't stand the sight of me.
I'll talk to you about your driving later on, young man. Right now, I've got something to take up with our beloved principal.
Okay, Miss Brooks. See you in class.
Good morning, Mr. Conklin. May I speak with you for a moment?
You'll have to wait until I look over this rear fender of mine, Miss Brooks. My dear wife used the car yesterday, backed it out of the garage in her customary side saddle manner. Women drivers. Gad, it'll cost me $10 to have that fender straightened out.
Oh, not necessarily, Mr. Conklin. You could put it into the school shop, and the boys will be happy to fix it for nothing.
Just what I was thinking. The boys in the school shop will be happy to fix it for nothing. Now, what is it you wanted to talk to me about?
The reckless driving among our teenage citizens. The local police force just can't cope with it alone. Now, what I had in mind was a student police force with authority to discipline themselves.
A student police force? But who ever heard of such a thing? It's preposterous.
No, it isn't, Mr. Conklin. The kids would be ashamed to be caught driving recklessly by their own friends. And in conjunction with the police force, I think we should have a driving class at Madison.
You mean you are actually proposing that we teach our students to drive an automobile during the regular school hours?
Those who need it, yes. We could... Oh, look who just got to school.
It's Mr. Boynton, isn't it?
But he's behind you. How could you tell?
By the way, your eyeballs spun around in their sockets.
They always do that when I get something in my eye. Especially him.
Good morning, Miss Brooks, Mr. Conklin.
Hello, Boynton.
Sir, there's something I want to suggest to you.
In a moment, Boynton. First, I'd like you to listen to an idea I just had.
Yes, sir?
What would you think of our instituting in this school a student police force?
A student police force?
Exactly. One with authority to discipline each and every offender among the student body.
Well, say, that sounds like a fine idea.
You really like it?
I love it.
I hate it. I mean, that was only part of it.
Please, please, Miss Brooks, please. I'd like to hear what Mr. Boynton has to say to me.
Well, sir, it was just that I read where Jason Brill over at Clay City has organized a driving class for the students, and I think we should follow suit.
Some days it doesn't pay to get out of bed.
A driving class, eh? Now, that's what I call a sterling suggestion. An extremely original thought, Boynton. It is with a great deal of pleasure, therefore, that I hereby appoint you Madison's driving instructor. You will give your first lesson at 2 o'clock today.
Oh, but Mr. Conklin, I can't give any lessons today. I've got too full a schedule. Besides, this isn't a job for just one person. From what I've read of other schools, it's usually operated by a team of teachers.
Oh, I see. Well, who else should we get?
Well, how about Miss Brooks here?
Miss Brooks? Boynton, are you suggesting that we have a woman teach our already reckless drivers how to operate a motor vehicle in safety? Isn't that like carrying coals to Newcastle?
I don't mind. I'll wear gloves.
Well, I've driven with Miss Brooks many times, sir, and I can assure you she's extremely competent behind the wheel.
I suppose there's nothing else we can do. So against my better judgment, I hereby appoint you one of the instructors, Miss Brooks.
Oh, you won't be sorry, Mr. Conklin. I'll make you glad you picked me. You'll see, I'll do a great job with these kids. I'll get them right in line. Yes, sir.
Step back, Miss Brooks. You're fogging my glasses.
Yes, Mr. Conklin. Now, for the head student traffic officer, I'd like to submit the name of Walter Denton.
Walter Denton? But I've seen that idiot drive. To propose Walter Denton as a police officer is devoid of any spark of intelligence, Miss Brooks.
But you're wrong, Mr. Conklin. Don't you see, this is a perfect example of criminal psychology. By making the worst offender a law enforcement agent, he is automatically eliminated as a reckless driver.
Well, that does seem to be a pretty logical argument, sir.
Wait a minute, both of you. While you were talking, I was thinking. Why don't we appoint, as head of the student police force, somebody like Walter Denton?
That idiot driver?
Don't you get it? By making the worst offender a law enforcement agent, he is automatically eliminated as a reckless driver.
Mr. Conklin, that's a stroke of sheer genius. Let me shake your hand, sir.
Here. Well, Miss Brooks, do you care to add anything to my little plan?
Yes, sir, I would, but there's one thing that prevents me.
Oh, what's that?
I can't seem to get my words out of your mouth.
Brush your teeth with Colgate's Colgate Dental Cream. It cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
What a cleans your teeth.
Colgate toothpaste.
Cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
What a cleans your teeth.
Colgate Dental Cream cleans your breath while it cleans your teeth. And the Colgate way stops tooth decay best. More than 2 years' research showed the Colgate way of brushing teeth right after eating helps stop more decay for more people than ever before reported in dentifrice history. Yes, the Colgate way stopped tooth decay best. Better than any other home method of oral hygiene. No other dentifrice, ammoniated or not, has proof of such results. And you should know that Colgate, while not mentioned by name, was the one and only toothpaste used in the research on tooth decay recently reported in Reader's Digest. So always follow the Colgate way to clean your breath while you clean your teeth. And stop tooth decay best.
Brush your teeth with Colgate. Colgate Dental Cream. It cleans your breath.
What a toothpaste.
What a cleans your teeth.
And the Colgate way stops tooth decay best.
Well, right after lunch period, Mr. Boynton had to go down to the biology supply house. I wanted him to stay and help me with the driving lessons, but he said he couldn't afford to miss a great opportunity. It seems the supply house had just received a rare shipment by airmail. As I recall, they were either English angleworms or English ingleworms. In any event, I had to stop in Mr. Conklin's office for further instructions.
Well, Miss Brooks, as faculty advisor to the new student police force, you'll be pleased to know that Mr. Stone, the head of the Board of Education, is 100% behind my plan.
Good.
He had one suggestion, moreover, which I believe to be sound. The force will function as a policing agency for both students and faculty. If a teacher is caught violating a traffic law in this area, he or she will be punished accordingly.
That sounds fair.
Thank you. Now, I have before me a list of possible penalties for the guilty ones. As you know, we can't fine the students, and it would be inequitable to impose cash fines upon the teachers.
Inequitable and uncollectible.
Quite. So, for the first offender, I have decided that the penalty will be mowing the lawn every day for a month and cleaning all the windows.
All the windows in the school?
No, all the windows in my house.
But this is a school project. The board would never stand for anybody doing your personal work, Warden. I mean, Mr. Conklin.
On second thought, nothing succeeds like good old KP. Yes, that's it. When we really want to make an example of someone, we'll do what we did in the army. We'll hustle him up to the cafeteria, hand him a mop, and say, "Get with it, Matilda, make those floors shine."
What branch of the wax were you in? About the driving class, Mr. Conklin, there's one minor detail we've overlooked.
What's that, Miss Brooks?
We don't have an automobile. It'll take quite a bit of time for the board to provide a vehicle for us.
Well, borrow one temporarily.
All right, I will. Mr. Conklin, may I borrow your car for the driving lesson today?
My car? You must be joking. You don't think I'd entrust my automobile to a gang of scatterbrained, bumbling jitterbugs, do you?
But, sir, Jason Brill donated his car to Clay City High.
Jason Brill?
Yes, sir. And every paper in the city ran his picture and a nice story about him.
The silver one on the end is the ignition key.
Hey, wait up a minute, Stretch. you.
Who wants to talk to me?
Don't let the black turtleneck sweater and the pilot's goggles fool you. It's me, Walter.
Well, for goodness sake, what are you dressed up like that for, Walter? Going to a maxerade?
Of course not. No, I've just been commissioned captain of the Madison High Safety Patrol.
No kidding. When do you go overseas?
I don't. It's a local office. I'm head of the student police force. You see, I just got my orders from the Board of Education. And Mr. Stone himself told me to be sure and make an example out of any traffic violators. That includes teachers, too.
No fooling.
It's a big responsibility, Stretch.
You know something, Walter? I can see a change in you already.
You can?
Sure, you got jam on your face instead of peanut butter.
Sometimes I wonder how we got to be such good friends.
Well, look who's coming in, Walter. It's Miss Brooks.
Oh, she hasn't seen me since I put this black outfit on. I'll slip the goggles over my eyes and see if she recognizes me.
Okay. Hi, Miss Brooks. Look who's here. Recognize him?
I'd know him anywhere. Baron von Richthofen.
No, ma'am. It's me, Walter Denton. Now, this is the outfit I'm going to wear for tracking down traffic criminals. Well, I've got to get ready to go on patrol, Miss Brooks. Will you excuse me?
Of course, Baron. Walter.
See you later, Captain Denton.
At ease, my man. Well, see you at the lineup, Miss Brooks.
I'm looking forward to it. Well, Stretch, Mr. Conklin sent his car over here to be repaired. Could you tell me where it is?
Well, it's right there. That's the one I just finished working on.
You?
Yes, ma'am. I straightened out a fender for him. It's as good as new now.
Oh, fine.
Also, I had an extra hour to kill in the shop, so I went under the hood and fixed up Mr. Conklin's clutch, retimed his distributor, and checked his ignition system.
But I've got to give a lesson in that car.
Oh, don't worry about that, Miss Brooks. What I'd done couldn't make too much difference. Not when I had to work in the dark like I did.
In the dark?
The bulb burned out in my work light. I did the whole job in total blackness.
But why didn't you put another bulb in the work light?
My motto is, don't tackle no new trouble till you conquer your old trouble. I better tell you about a few simple changes I made in the mechanism. I discovered them after I got the light fixed.
I wish I knew more about self-hypnosis. Go on, Stretch.
Well, first of all, to let out the clutch, use the brake pedal instead.
That's a pretty simple change. All I have to do is put my right shoe on my left foot. Please continue.
Well, I jazzed up the motor so it can really dig out, only you use a hand throttle. The gas pedal now acts as the brake.
It's reversed in the glove compartment?
No, ma'am. I eliminated reverse. And also first and second. And I fixed the ignition so you have to turn it on from under the hood. That way nobody can steal the car.
Who'd want it? Oh, Stretch, before I take this flying saucer out of here, are you quite certain I won't have to steer from the back seat?
Gosh, no, Miss Brooks. That'd be dangerous.
Stretch, remind me to mark your next test paper with an empty fountain pen. All right, kids, quiet down. Now, we've completed our basic blackboard work on courtesy of the road, and now we're going to have a practical demonstration out here on the street. Harriet Conklin, I believe your hand was up first.
Yes, Miss Brooks. I'm very anxious to learn how to drive. Of course, I don't know how Daddy'll feel about it.
It shouldn't take long to find out. He's standing right at your elbow.
How observant. What is all this, Harriet?
I've wanted to learn for a long time, Daddy. Mother says she thinks I should.
Oh, she does. Well, won't that be bully for me? Mine will be the only car in town being driven by two fender assassins.
Please, Daddy, I'll be very careful. And Miss Brooks is here to teach me.
Exactly. I refuse to place my own flesh and blood in jeopardy.
But, Mr. Conklin, Harriet has just as much right to take advantage of this class as any of the other kids.
You said yourself, Daddy, that this school is run on democratic principles. Please let me learn.
Oh, all right. But you're not going to learn from Miss Brooks. I personally will give you your first lesson. Get in, Harriet.
But, Daddy, what'll Miss Brooks do?
Your precious Miss Brooks can climb in with us. Now, come on. Maybe I can teach you to operate this vehicle and still eliminate some of the natural female driving instincts.
Before you start, Mr. Conklin, the ignition is on, but I think
you
should know...
Please get in.
Yes, sir. Mr. Conklin, I'd like to explain something about the mechanism of this car. It's got a new kind of...
You want to explain something to me about my own car? Now, that is what I call rich. What are you laughing at?
I guess I'm just a copycat.
Let's get started, Daddy. I'm anxious to get the principles down pat.
When we get started, I know one principle you'll have down.
Ladies, stop the chattering, please. We're about to begin. Now, first, Harriet, to start the car, I press this little button on the dashboard. Firmly. Like this.
It didn't start.
No, but all the lights went on.
I'll try it again. Ah, there we are. Now, I'll just shift it into first gear. What's this? The clutch won't move.
Of course not. You've got to step on the brake.
Step on the brake? To start my car?
You depress that brake pedal, Harriet. Let's surprise your daddy.
Okay, here goes.
Ooh. Good heavens, what happened?
Watch where you're driving, Daddy.
You, why, yes. We're going 50 miles an hour and I haven't shifted into high yet.
Sure you have, Mr. Conklin. There isn't any first or second gear.
Oh. Isn't any first or second gear?
Boy, this car can really dig out, Daddy.
One more turn like that, and they'll dig us out of the upholstery.
Oh, this is awful. We're at the mercy of this steel monster. I've got to stop it.
I would if I were you. Just step on the gas pedal.
The gas pedal?
You just went through a red light, Daddy.
Now you're on the wrong side of the street. Please, sir, jam your foot down on the gas pedal.
She's taken leave of her senses. We've got a maniac in the car with her.
Calm down, Daddy. Maybe you ought to turn off the motor.
What? The motor? Oh, yes, yes. Yes, that's what I'll do. I'll turn off the motor. But the ignition switch. Where's the ignition switch?
That's up front, under the hood.
Oh, good. I'll just step out and I'll walk up to the... Under the hood!
Why, it's all right, Miss Brooks. Daddy's passing it on the left.
I know. But it was coming towards us.
There's only one way to stop this juggernaut. I'll try to ease it over the sidewalk up ahead and bring it to stop against one of those hedges. Oh, here's a hedge that looks nice and bushy.
Trimmed it.
Dean Barton as our Miss Brooks returns in just a moment, but first...
Dream girl, beautiful luster cream girl.
Tonight? Yes, tonight. Show him how much lovelier your hair can look after a Luster Cream shampoo. Luster Cream, world's finest shampoo. No other shampoo in the world gives you Kay Dumit's magic blend of secret ingredients plus gentle lanolin. Better than a soap, better than a liquid, Luster Cream is an anti-cream shampoo. Leaves hair three ways lovelier. Fragrantly clean, free of loose dandruff, glistening with sheen. Soft, manageable. Even in hardest water, Luster Cream lathers instantly. So gentle,
Luster Cream is wonderful even for children's hair. Tonight? Yes, tonight, try Luster Cream Shampoo.
Dream girl, dream girl, beautiful Luster Cream girl. You owe your crowning glory to a Luster Cream Shampoo.
And now, once again, here is our Miss Brooks.
Well, as soon as we determined that no one was injured, Harriet tried to console her father about the condition of his car.
The insurance company will take care of your car, Daddy. They may even get you a brand new one.
Oh, you're right at that, Harriet. Say, it could have been a lot worse, couldn't it?
Turn your head slowly to the left, Mr. Conklin.
What?
Stop in the name of the law!
Now, that's what I call a timely command.
Why, it's Walter Denton.
So it is. Well, you just keep your nose out of this, Denton.
You will kindly refer to me as Captain Denton. You forget, sir, I was commissioned by your superior officer, Mr. Stone, head of the Board of Education.
What? But there's no reason for him to hear this.
And not unless you're recalcitrant.
Nice word, Captain Denton.
Thanks, Miss Brooks. May I borrow your pencil, please, sir?
My pencil? Oh, yes, yes, of course. Here you are, Captain. We were just driving along at a normal rate of speed, but suddenly things...
How do you spell psychopathic?
Psychopathic. P-S-Y-C-H-O-P-A-T-H-I-C. Now, you don't have to enter too specific a report about this.
Driving down Main Street like a psychopathic idiot.
What?
P-S-Y-C-H-O-P-A-T-H-I-C.
Look here, Denton. Officer Denton. Couldn't we talk this over, Walter? Walter, my boy? Son?
I'm sorry, Mr. Conklin. It's extremely difficult for me in this instance, but I must be ruthless.
It is difficult for him, Mr. Conklin. Walter's naturally very rude.
Here you are, sir. The punishment is written on the ticket.
Oh, where? My glasses fell off when we stopped this booby trap. I can't...
Here, I'll read it for you, Mr. Conklin. It says, for offenses too offensive to mention, starting this evening, the prisoner will serve 30 days on KP.
KP? Me? But I can't. I won't. Something must be done about this. Well, don't sit there, Miss Brooks. Tell me what I can do.
Pick up your mop, Matilda. Those floors must shine tonight.
Another Our Miss Brooks show, brought to you by Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair, and Colgate Dental Cream to clean your breath while you clean your teeth and help stop tooth decay. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written by Al Lewis, with the music of Wilbur Hatch. Mr. Boynton is played by Jeff Chandler, Mr. Conklin by Gail Gordon. Others in tonight's cast were Jane Morgan, Dick Crenna, Gloria McMillan, and Leonard Smith.
You want a beauty soap for a beauty bath.
And your bath becomes a beauty bath when you change to proper cleansing with Palmolive soap.
For bathing with this beauty soap brings you the full beautifying effects of Palmolive's mild and gentle lather, proved by doctors to bring most women lovelier complexions in just 14 days.
Bath-size Palmolive is designed to give you everything you need for all-over beauty care. Fragrance for daintiness, mildness for loveliness. Purity for gentleness, big bath size for thriftiness.
So get big bath size Palmolive. So mild, so pure, so right for all of you.
If you like mysteries that are as full of chuckles as chills, be sure to hear Mr. and Mrs. North every Tuesday over this same network. And don't miss the exciting and laughable adventures of these amateur detectives. Hear Mr. and Mrs. North every Tuesday night. And be with us again next week at this same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Bob Lamond speaking. Stay tuned now for Jack Benny. This is CBS, Columbia Broadcasting System.
Slip, the beer that
just made Milwaukee famous, presents The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Good evening, this is Ronald Coleman.
And Benita Coleman.
Inviting you to join us again on the campus of Ivy College as the guests of our sponsors, the brewers of Schlitz beer.
The taste of Schlitz. The taste so many people prefer has made Schlitz beer first in sales in the USA. If you like good beer, do as millions of people are doing all over the nation. Ask for Schlitz, the most popular beer in history. And now, the Halls of Ivy. Welcome again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. On almost any campus, Saturday morning is an occasion for late rising, eager preparations for various forms of violent relaxation, and assorted escapes from academic confinement. Dr. William Todd Hunter Hall, president of Ivy, also appreciates the boundless promise of the day. But even more, he appreciates his beautiful wife, Victoria, to whom he's saying,
"A fine Victorian hand has been at work this morning, my sweet."
"What is it?"
"I have just been in my study, prepared to straighten out innumerable small confusions, and I find that everything is dreadfully in order. I shall be weeks recovering that chaos, which I always hope gives visitors the proper impression of midnight oil squandered and toil unremitting."
"Was I wrong to do it? It looked as though the wires had broken on a bale of waste paper."
"Yes, I know. It must be rather frustrating for a conscientious homebody to have a husband who conducts his official affairs with the happy abandon of a mouse in a wastebasket."
"What does that make me, a mouse wife?"
"A mouse wife, very charming."
"Yes, charming."
But would you prefer to have a husband with a neat study and a disorderly mind, or one with an orderly mind and a study which looks as though it was swept out each evening by an ill-tempered man on a bulldozer?"
"I'll settle for the neat fella with the ill-tempered mouse. Now, shall I go back in and nasty up the tidiness?"
"Oh, no, dear. Thank you. May I ask what brought on this outburst of domestic order?"
"It's Saturday."
"Oh, it's Saturday. Is that an explanation or just a flat, irrelevant statement?"
"Why, it's very logical. Saturday is I sort the laundry."
"Oh, of course, yes. Sort the laundry. Mm-hmm. Now, let me see. Mental association. Clean sheets of paper, ergo, clean study. Of course, darling, the logic is inescapable."
"That's your logic, not mine."
"Well, what's yours, starting with this is Saturday?"
"Well, very well. Now, this is Saturday. Saturday, I sort the laundry. And Mr. Jessup, who delivers the laundry, always reminds me of the little man we asked to take our picture on London Bridge."
"London Bridge, yes." "No, please proceed. I am fascinated by your mental processes."
"Well, it follows quite naturally. I was reminded of that picture, and all of a sudden, I wanted to look at it again. And I knew you had it someplace in your study, so I went to look for it. And I bumped into your chessboard and knocked off some of the pieces. And I felt so guilty, I thought I'd make up for it by straightening out your study, you see?"
Yes, of course. A simple chain of events easily followed by anyone. Particularly the seventh son of a seventh son, born with a caul, proficient with a Ouija board, and gifted with second sight. Anyway, I do thank you. As Ben Franklin said in his Poor Richard, if you want a neat wife, choose her on a Saturday.
Oh. You may have chosen me on a Saturday, dear, but you proposed on a Wednesday.
Well, the sight of you, having always made me deliriously weak in the middle, it was only logical that I should take such a delirious step in the middle of the week. And now, a brief farewell, my love.
Yeah, farewell? What, are you running away and joining the gypsies just because your study is neat?
No. I have some matters to clear up at the administration office.
Oh.
If Mr. Wellman calls, tell him I have left for Upper Rhodesia with my butterfly net. To look for the rare Flitterensis peculiarina.
Oh, are you expecting Mr. Wellman to call?
No, but that's when he always does call. He is a living inadvertence, alert for the unpropitious.
Well, I'll tell you, you said so, if I can remember it, which I doubt. Now, come on, I'll go to the door with you and pick up the mail, huh?
Ah, what a crisp, lovely day.
You sure you don't want to change your mind and stay home, Toddy? That new 2-volume Thomas Jefferson you ordered came yesterday.
No, no, no. Don't tempt me, my sweet. Mm-hmm. Ah, look at them, Vicky. The Harriers of the cross-country team. Nothing more graceful than a foot runner who has hit his stride.
Well, they must like what they're doing. I can't imagine any other reason for running down the street in your undies in the middle of winter. You know, they look like fugitives from a press while you wait shop.
Coach Simmons seems to think we have a good chance against Bradford next month, thanks to Bruce Dillon.
Dillon? Oh, isn't he the long-distance man?
Just distance, darling.
Oh.
Long-distance is usually a woman. Oh. Well, at any rate, Bruce Dillon is the best 2-miler Ivy's ever had.
Oh, look at that poor little perisher. They've left him way behind.
No, dear, the others moved ahead. That's Wally Lovett.
Oh, yeah, I know him. Don't they call him Tagalong?
Yes, but he makes up in eagerness and perseverance what he lacks in ability. Hello there, Wally.
Oh, morning, Dr. Hall. Hello, Mrs. Hall.
Well, we didn't mean you to stop, Wally. Aren't you being timed or something?
5 minutes won't make much difference one way or the other. They don't use a stopwatch on me. Just an hourglass full of wet sand. Haven't got my stride yet. And my breath's a little short.
Oh, it'll get better when you catch your second wind, Wally.
That's what the coach is always telling me. But I'm still working on my first wind. Does that sound right to you?
Sounds as though your fan belt's broken. How can you tell when it's your first or second wind?
I wouldn't know. I never had a second wind. But they tell in your arms and legs, and you don't know you're breathing, and you don't feel anything, and don't care, then you've got your second wind.
Or else you're dead. Molly, tell me, if running is as painful for you as it sounds, why do you do it?
I like it.
No further questions?
Of course, I'd like it a whole lot better if I could come in someplace before last, just once.
Well, if determination and faithful practice have anything to do with it, I'm sure you'll have your reward, Wally.
Well, it's a cinch. I'm not going to get any better just talking about it. Besides, I guess I've given the other fellows enough of a head start. Joke. And away I go. Bye.
Bye. Oh, no, he reminds me of a rag doll. He doesn't run, he just flaps. Is he really going to try and catch up with the other boys?
Try, yes, but he won't, and he knows he won't. But that isn't what's most important to him right now. He's still looking for his second wind. And when he's found that, Vicky, he's won his first prize. Vicky, you home?
Hello, darling. Have a good morning.
Wonderful. You worked up a tremendous appetite. What do we have for lunch?
Mr. Wellman, I'm afraid.
Oh. How are we having him? Sautéed or scalloped?
Well, he was scorched when he arrived, and by now I think he's burned to a crisp. He brought the track coach with him, and...
I'm waiting, Dr. Hall. In fact, I've been waiting.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Wellman.
I mentioned the fact that Coach Simmons has been waiting also. Two.
Hello, Mr. Simmons.
How are you, Dr. Hall?
Oh, I'm fine.
I'm sick. Sick of de-emphasis. It's all you hear. De-emphasis here, de-emphasis there. What's the matter with emphasis?
I think, Mr. Wellman, that perhaps
you
I...
You told me what you think, Simmons, and Dr. Hall told everybody what he thinks, and nobody's thinking about the boy. One minute we tell him, go, get him, beat him. Next we tell him, no, don't, stop. Well, I say go, and may the best man win. Well...
Well, I agree with you, Mr. Wellman.
Oh, no, you don't. All this is about too much emphasis on athletics. Wortleweed. That is, I mean, weaselwort. Look,
what is done. We're not cheering our boys on. We're discouraging them.
But, Mr. Wellman, I saw a whole flock of boys out running this morning, and they didn't look discouraged. Unless you're speaking of Wally Lovett, and he was only trying to get his second win.
Lovett? Ha! And that's another thing, Simmons. You keep a deadhead like Lovett on the team and let Dillon go.
Well, I can't do anything about Lovett, Mr. Wellman. I know he's lousy, but I like him.
And he likes to run.
But what's this about Bruce Dillon?
It's a disgrace. That's all a disgrace.
Dr. Hall, I wouldn't have come to you about Dillon, but Mr. Wellman insisted.
Suggested, Simmons. Suggested.
Well, yes. Suggested on an or else basis. You see, Dillon has dropped off the track team, Dr. Hall.
Well, that is bad news.
Did he give you any reason, Coach?
Oh, yes. Yes, and one I never thought I'd live to hear. He feels that he's been wasting precious time that he came to Ivy to study. He's studying, all right. He's out to make straight A's or bust.
Ha ha! How do you like that, Dr. Hall?
If I didn't like the idea of a student trying to make good grades, Mr. Wellman, I'd have to resign my position. I must admit that it's good to hear of a runner who wants to toe the mark scholastically.
Well, perhaps the real significance of this has escaped you, Dr. Hall. A very fine athlete has been so de-emphasized, he's turned into nothing but a student.
Poor boy, you make him sound utterly depraved.
I didn't say that, Mrs. Hall.
Well, you implied that, Mr. Wellman, but perhaps we misunderstood you.
My compliments, Dr. Hall, for admitting the possibility. If I haven't made myself clear, then I don't understand myself. And if I don't, why don't I? Because I put the interests of Ivy before myself. And if you and Simmons can't see what's happening right under your... that's all I have to say.
Look, Dr. Hall, a coach can push a boy a little now and then, but he's got to know when to stop or he'll just shove him on his face. If Dillon doesn't want to run, I don't want him. No matter how good he is, if he feels that way, he's still no good to me.
Maybe not to you, Simmons, but don't stand there and tell me Bruce Dillon isn't good for Ivy. That he isn't the best man we've ever... That he hasn't a chance. I mean, he might even go to Sal Hinkie for the Olympic Games. Sal Hinkie, that is. No, I mean, Hell Sinkie.
Mr. Wellman, Dillon has made his decision, and I believe that each individual student must determine for himself his reason for being here. This is not a question of de-emphasizing anything. It's simply a matter of placing the emphasis where it properly belongs.
Well, I don't belong here, Dr. Hall. Obviously, I'm a minority in this matter, but thank goodness I'm a minority with the majority on my side. Goodbye.
I must admit there's one thing I admire about Mr. Wellman. He always raises his colors in defeat.
He makes a hasty retreat sound like a rousing victory. Well, I want to thank you, Coach, for your enlightened attitude.
Well, Dr. Hall, I want to win, but that's not all I want. Maybe that's why I'm coaching at a small college and loving it. Thank you both for your patience. Bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Simmons.
Poor Coach Simmons. My first year, he gets a really hot prospect, and look what happens. Bruce Dillon comes down with a case of athlete's brain.
Well, athlete's brain is a disease unlikely to reach epidemic proportions. Some students are bound to take scholastic honors, and some are bound to earn marks for strength and agility. But it's a rare thing to find the honor-bound and the muscle-bound in the same package.
Doc Bateman, the head of Ivy's chemistry department, the other day. Doc was correcting mid-quarter examination papers, and I interrupted him just as I heard.
Oh, no.
Well, hello, Doc. Is something wrong?
Huh? Oh, it's you, Carpenter. There's nothing wrong. I'm merely exercising your professor's right to gloom at the answers I get to my exam questions.
Oh? Well, what particular answer had you on the ropes as I came in?
Question 4, part 2 of our recent Chemistry 1 exam reads, and I quote, "Describe the composition of coal."
Oh, that's a good question. What's wrong with it?
Of course it's a good question. The only thing wrong about it is this answer. And again, I quote, "Coal is composed of big chunks and little chunks and coal dust."
Well, isn't it?
Oh, Carpenter, everyone except you and my students know that coal is a carboniferous classification of vegetable matter.
Oh, sure, I know, Doc, but who cares?
You say who cares to me? Julius Charles Bateman, head of the Ivy Chemistry
Oh, look, Doc, I'll explain. For example, you take Schlitz beer. Beer lovers know that it's brewed from select barley and hops and yeast and other fine ingredients. But what they really care about is how Schlitz beer tastes. And let me tell you,
Doc... Just a minute, Carpenter, let me save you the trouble. Schlitz beer tastes so good, it's the best-liked beer in America. Is that what you were going to tell me?
Well, that's right, Doc. How'd you know?
Carpenter, I've heard you before. Don't ask me why I listen. I just do. A man has to have some weaknesses. And besides, I like Schlitz beer myself.
Ah, good for you, Doc.
Yes. Let's take a 10-minute break and take it big. You know where we can find a couple of bottles of Schlitz nearby?
Doc, I just might. Let's be on our way right now. It's a few days later in the early afternoon, and Dr. Hall is in his study. As a matter of fact, he's in a brown study when his wife, Victoria, enters.
Oh, why, Charlie, I didn't know you were still here. I thought you'd gone.
A slight delay, Vicky. Oh. Mr. Wellman's secretary called to say that Clarence would be coming over at 2:30, and he didn't want to miss me.
I hope you told her that you wouldn't miss him.
Yes, well, the retort occurred to me, my dear, but insults, when necessary, and they almost never are, should be personally delivered, not through secretaries.
Oh, well, with you, dear, bad manners are an effort. What are you looking at?
No, nothing, just an old scrapbook.
Well, let me see. Oh, Toddy, look at you in your underwear.
Vicky, that is a tracksuit.
Oh.
I was somewhat of a dash man, you know.
Well, you're still dashing to me, darling. Mm-hmm. But didn't your knees ever get cold?
Well, when one runs the 100-yard dash in approximately 10 seconds flat, one is totally oblivious to the weather. Of course, I use the word approximately loosely. The truth is that my best time was 10 2/5 seconds, and that was considered quite good in those days.
Mm. Well, what are you doing back in those days at this particular moment? Why the research?
I was checking on some track records. Before I started working myself down to a maudlin nostalgia over my undergraduate athletic triumph. I was trying to find out when we last defeated Bradford in track. I found out it was a long time ago.
Mm. You really did have high hopes of winning this year, didn't you, darling?
Well, I... Yes, of course I did, Vicky.
Until Bruce Dillon dashed them.
Oh, mind you, I've nothing but admiration for that boy.
No.
How many times to find a young man who is such a brilliant athlete, who can win so many honors, and yet who can make such a courageous decision to give them up?
Mm.
After all, it's not often that you... I wonder, and mind you, I wouldn't confess this to anyone but you, Vicky.
No.
But I wonder, was it really necessary for him to take such a drastic step?
Well, you think you could maybe talk to him and change his mind?
Yes, I could talk to him No, Vicky, how can I? How could I, as the president of the university, go to a student and suggest that he is overemphasizing his studies?
Yeah, I can see where that might confuse him slightly. But why couldn't you suggest that perhaps he might more wisely distribute his time and energies?
You mean, say, 2 hours in the library to 1 hour on the field?
Yes,
that's not a bad idea, Vicky. I could... No, I couldn't. After all, he's crossed his Rubicon, and I can only commend him for it.
Mm. Besides, you know, you can be very persuasive, darling, and you wouldn't want to influence him, would you?
Oh, no. Nope, the issue's closed.
Yes.
Nothing to do but forget it.
No.
Of course, this was just a moment of weakness, Vicky, you know. I could only indulge in the privacy of my own home.
Yes.
Thanks to your understanding.
It isn't going to be private any longer. Almost the first, if not the only virtue you notice in Mr. Wellman is that he's always punctual.
Dr. Hall is expected in this place. Thank you.
Hello, Dr. Hall.
Oh.
Oh, hello, Mr. Wellman.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Wellman. You sound tired. Aren't you feeling well?
Yes, it's not me that's sick. Dr. Hall, I know there are times when I seem to lose control of myself in my eagerness to serve Ivy.
Which everybody knows you do with the greatest of energy and vigor, Mr. Wellman.
Yes, and sometimes I may raise my voice and become... Well, you can't change human nature.
But, Mr. Wellman, you've changed. I hardly recognize you.
Thank you, Mrs. Hall. But it's too late.
Well, good heavens, what's happened?
Just a matter of a few days before he would have to change his mind, which I never had any doubt of, that he would. Never for one minute did I believe that Bruce Dillon would stick to that ridiculous, that insane, that nonsense of his.
And has he changed his mind, Mr. Wellman?
He's sick, Dr. Hall. Dillon is in the infirmary.
Oh, why, that's a shame.
Oh,
what's
I'm
the
sorry.
Matter with him?
He itches day and night. They examined him thoroughly, and they can't find anything. He just itches.
Well, Mr. Wellman, I think...
It was bound to happen. A nervous breakdown. A fish out of water. A shoemaker should stick to his last. A grind to the millstone. His nose.
But Mr. Wellman, I think that...
You were only thinking about academic standards. Simmons wasn't thinking at all, but I was all the time. I was thinking about the boy.
But, Mr. Wellman, what is it, Dr. Hall? Mr. Wellman, you've started me thinking that perhaps your news may turn out to be good news.
Good news? Our best crack man in the hospital? You call that good news? Why, Dr. Hall, of all the inhuman, the heartless, the cold-blooded... Well, Dr. Hall, all I can say is that with what you're thinking, I hope you can sleep tonight. Goodbye.
Now I recognize him. That was Mr. Wellman.
Well, and he was right. I was thinking about academic standards. It made me realize that now I have to go and speak to Bruce Dillon. Come on, Vicky. Well, it's certainly flattering to have the president and his wife come to see me, but, Dr. Hall, I didn't know I was that sick. Fortunately, you're not really sick, Bruce. Dr. Taysom has assured us that your condition is only temporary.
And besides, Dr. Hall and I don't limit our sick calls only to those who are in extremis. Has your itching stopped?
It comes on me in waves, Mrs. Hall, but I'll try not to scratch while you're here.
Ah, don't mind me. As the old saying goes, scratch where it itches, not where it looks the best.
That'll subside, Bruce. Not likely to last the legendary 7 years. But you're just upset, emotionally as well as physically. It takes time for your system to become accommodated to such an abrupt change of pace. I guess I did start track too quick.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. You might easily have.
I suppose I'll have to go back out and get some exercise.
Good, good.
Yeah. A half hour now and then in the gym ought to take care of me, don't you think, Dr. Hall? In the gym? Yes, yes.
Oh, well, perhaps half an hour running someplace.
Yep. I mustn't give it up too abruptly. Oh, no.
No,
if I did that, I'd end up on the track team again, right back with the same old problem.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
See, I finally woke up and realized that I've been wasting my time for the past 2 years.
Well, I hadn't heard that you were failing any of your courses, Bruce.
Oh, I'm getting by, but at the rate I've been going, I won't win any honors. That's why I decided to knuckle down and quit spending so much time on something that doesn't mean anything. After all, when you go to college...
Hey, Bruce, I brought you the book here. Oh, excuse me. Hello, Dr. Hall.
Hello, Wally.
Hello, Wally. What, no tracksuit?
Oh, I just got out of class, Mrs. Hall. I'm on my way to the lockers now.
Oh, you don't have to explain to me, Wally. Just so I know, you haven't thrown in the towel.
Oh, no, not me. Not now. Wait till you hear what's happened. Coach has put me on the team for the cross-country run against Bradford.
Well, that's great, kid. Well, congratulations, Wally. I know you'll do splendidly in the long run.
In the long run.
Thank you, my boy.
Oh, well, you see, Dr. Hall, the coach figured it this way. If I finish at all, it'll count for a point. Now, the fellas put it another way. They said there's always the happy possibility that one of the Bradford guys will drop dead.
And there's also the chance that you'd stumble over the body, thereby ruining your own chances. So let's hope that your triumph will be over live runners.
Well, I might surprise him if I ever get my stride. It's getting a little monotonous coming in last. I hardly know the rest of the team when I meet him face to face.
Well, there's one consolation, Wally. I've noticed that the last man often gets more applause than the winner.
That's the story of my life, Dr. Hall. All the other fellas left me. And a half hour later, in comes Wally Rearguard, and they give me a big cheer. And all I want is just one teasing little silver cup.
Listen, Wally, I've told you what's wrong. You're pressing too hard.
Look who's talking. Who's itching? Bruce, you're getting mental bound. Your brain's need a rub down. Well, I gotta get out and practice. I'll see you. Bye, Dr. Hall.
Bye. Goodbye, Wally. Wally. Oh, you know, Wally's my roommate, but I sure don't understand him. I don't think he's ever going to win anything, but he keeps knocking himself out. And for what? Oh, for the reason that people have been playing games since the beginning of time, Bruce. To take part in something. To try to win, yes, but most importantly, to take part in a contest of some kind.
And it doesn't matter whether it's a potato race or the picnic or the Olympic Games.
I was fortunate enough to attend the 1932 Olympics in Los Angeles. Little Japanese girl ran in the hurdle race. At the gun, she was left on her mark. Then she crashed into the first hurdle and took a bad fall. She picked herself up, ran and hit the next hurdle and fell on her face again. She hit every hurdle on the course, but she got up again and again. And she finished with tears streaming down her face and down the faces of almost 100,000 people in the stands. We all recognized that the courage, which would finish a course strewn with failure, had won a phantom ribbon to wear on her spirit.
You've made your point, Dr. Hall. I guess I'm just dumb. You just proved to me that Wally's got more brains than I have. He isn't overemphasizing overemphasis.
Well, you're not necessarily dumb, Bruce. You both make good grades, and you both love to run. The only difference is that while Wally hasn't got his stride yet, he's never lost his balance. And despite shoes or philosophy, if you keep a sense of proportion, you're running on the right track.
Starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Colvin has been presented by Schlitz, the beer that made Milwaukee famous. The taste of Schlitz, the taste so many people prefer, has made Schlitz beer first in sales in the USA. Why don't you, too, enjoy the most popular beer in history? Next time, every time, ask for Schlitz beer. And now, here again are Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Colvin.
Thank you, Ken. Ladies and gentlemen, one of our characters tonight was a boy who ran without any hope of winning. He ran because he liked to run. Most healthy boys do. But last year in America, there were an estimated 28,500 cases of polio. Boys and girls, men and women, who were taken out of the running by this crippling disease.
4 out of 5 of these cases were financed, at least in part, by the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis, the March of Dimes. But polio is creeping ahead of the available funds. So please make as generous a donation as you can.
Yours is the power to line with silver the dark clouds which threaten our children and our neighbors. Thank you. Good night.
Good night from all of us.
And from our sponsor, the Joseph Smith Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and its thousands of friendly dealers throughout the nation. Same time at the Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Colvin. Mr. Wellman is played by Herb Butterfield. Also in our cast were Ken Peters, William Tracy, and Victor Perrin. Tonight's script was written by Barbara and Milton Merlin and Don Quinn. The Halls of Ivy is presented by the Joseph Schlitz Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We invite you to enjoy on television the Schlitz Playhouse of Stars with the brightest names of Hollywood and Broadway. See your newspaper for Time and Channel. Ken Carpenter speaking.
Now, just for laughs, join the Great Gildersleeve on NBC.
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is tree. T-R-E-E.
Really?
You bet your life! The DeSoto Plymouth Dealers of America present Groucho Marx in You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here he is, the one, the only...
That's logical. This is National Pickle Week. Oh, that's me, Groucho Marx. Thank you. Well, here I am again with $1,000 for one of our couples. George Fenneman, who's first to try for it?
Just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected the mother of a large family and an expectant father. And here they are, Mrs. Lois Mayer and Mr. Charles Weiss. Meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, folks, for the DeSoto Plymouth Dealers. And if you say the secret word, you'll divide $100 in cash. It's a common word, something you see every day. Mrs. Maher, Lois Maher, you're the mother of a large family?
Yes, I am.
Pretty young-looking gal, aren't you? How large is your family?
I have 8 children.
You have 8
children? 8 children.
Well, you certainly don't look it. And Mr. Weiss, you're the expectant father?
Yes, sir.
You don't look it either. Do you have any other children, Mr. Weiss?
No, sir. This is my first.
Oh, your first, eh? Well, you better rest a while. The first one is the hardest. Where are you from, Mr. Weiss?
I was born in New Haven, Connecticut, raised in Newport, Rhode Island, moved to New York, and then came out here about a year and a half ago.
Who was after you? And, Mrs. Maher, what does your husband do for a living, Mrs. Maher?
Well, we just started catering not so long ago.
To each other? Well, where are you from, little mother?
I'm from Leona Mines, Virginia, and I lived in Cincinnati, Ohio after I was married, and then we came to California.
Is that the customary route? Now, tell us something about this catering you mentioned. What sort of a business is it, specifically?
Well, we put on dinners for parties.
Any particular kind of food or just...
Whatever you choose.
Well, I choose the food after I eat it, but... what do you charge for a dinner like that?
It's according to what you're going to eat.
You're pretty cagey, aren't you, huh? Well, approximately, Lois.
Oh, anywhere from $1.50 to $2.50 a plate.
And, suppose you put something on the plate. How much extra? I'll just call you Charlie, huh? Not you, Mrs. Moore. I mean you, What sort of work do you do, Charlie?
I'm a sales representative for Admiral, for America's number one television set, Admiral.
Did you just make that up? Could you get me one wholesale?
Come around.
Does anybody ever buy anything retail anymore? Huh? How old are your children, Lois?
Oh, I have them all ages.
You got one around 79? What do you mean, all ages?
No,
what?
15, 13, 12, 9, 7, 6, 4, and 8 months.
You just got under the wire there with that knife. At a family your size, Lois, how large a hotel do you run?
We have 4 bedrooms.
How do you get them all out in the morning? I mean, do you put them on a conveyor belt? Or...
Well, hardly like that. I have 5 boys and 3 girls. And I wake the oldest girl up first, and the baby wakes up instead of the oldest girl. And I go around yelling, 7:15, 7:15.
Suppose it's 8 o'clock. Do you still yell at 7:15? How do you discipline the youngsters?
Oh, they're pretty well behaved most of the time.
You never take a swipe at them?
Only in self-defense.
Did you have trouble finding names for all these kitties?
No, we have a book at home.
Well, Lois, my advice to you is it isn't too late. Throw the book away. How about you, Mr. Weiss? Have you got a definite name for your youngster?
Yes, we have.
You are? What are you going to name it, huh?
We don't know yet.
Well, that sounds pretty definite, huh? Sounds like an Indian name, huh?
What is the kid's name? We don't know yet, Jones. What do you mean you have a definite name, but you don't know yet?
Why? Well, we don't know what it'll
Charlie
be.
Charlie Weiss, what kind of talk is that? Huh?
We don't know what it'll be yet.
You mean there's a likelihood that it may have wings and fly out the window? Which would you prefer, Charlie, a boy or a girl?
Well, it doesn't make much difference to us as long as it's a baby.
Why do you want a baby?
Well,
what an odd thing to wish for, huh? Well, after we're through here, talk to Mrs. Moore about it. Maybe she can get it for you wholesale. Well, it's been very instructive talking to you two, and I hope you'll both be very happy. Now, in just 1 minute, you're going to play Your Bet Your Life for $1,000.
To millions of car owners across this nation, the sign of a DeSoto Plymouth dealer stands for two things. The best in new car values, the best in service. Next time you're at a DeSoto Plymouth dealer's for service, make it a point to find out about the two truly great new cars he sells. One is the brilliant new DeSoto, the car that's really new inside and out, bringing you more beauty, economy, and comfort. The moment you see the new DeSoto, you'll note its clean, modern design. The graceful new lines that sweep back from its magnificent new full-width front grille to its smart, roomy trunk. It's a thrilling car, this all-new DeSoto. The car that lets you drive without shifting. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell the beautiful new Plymouth. The car that likes to be compared.
Now, let's see if you two will be high for the night and get the chance at the $1,000. Fannerman, explain the rules.
Each of our three couples has $20. They bet as much of that 20 as they want on each of four questions. The couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,000 question at the end of the show. Our other two couples are in a waiting room offstage, so they don't know what's happening out here.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You selected mountain peaks of the world as your category. Is that right?
That's right.
Now, here's your first question. You have $20. How much will you risk?
$10.
All right. Where is Mauna Loa found? M-A-U-N-A, capital L-O-A.
In the Hawaiian Islands.
The Hawaiian Islands is right.
We're off to a good start, Groucho. They have $30.
All right. Remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. Now, how much of the 30 will you try?
25.
In what country is Popocatepetl found?
In Mexico.
Mexico is correct.
They're climbing. They have $55.
You got $55, and here's your third question. How much of the 55 do you want to try?
50.
Where is Mount Everest found?
Oh, Everest in Tibet.
They're really climbing now. They have $105.
105. 105.
You're going to shoot the whole
we'll
thing?
We'll shoot the work.
All right. Here's your last chance to beat the other couple. Where is Mount Vesuvius?
Mount Vesuvius is in Italy.
All right.
And they wind up with a grand total of $210.
Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers.
Groucho.
Yes.
The secret word is still tree. Perhaps the next couple will say it.
They might.
Just before we went on the air, we selected a housewife from the audience.
A good idea.
Her name is Mrs. Mary Ann Hughes.
A splendid notion.
And a hypnotist, Mr. Fred Schneider. And here they are. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome to Your Bet Your Life. And if you say the DeSoto Plymouth secret word, you'll divide $100 between you. It's a common word, something you see every day. Mr. Schneider, you're the hypnotist?
Yes, I am.
Well, don't look me in the eye when you answer me. Somebody has to stay awake around here. Now, Mrs. Hughes, Marion Hughes, huh? Marion Hughes and Repented Leisure, isn't that the... No, I guess not. You're the housewife?
Yes, I am.
Well, you're a very attractive housewife. Huh?
Thank you.
What does your husband do, Mrs. Hughes?
Well, he works for Food Craft.
Food Craft?
Mm-hmm. He sells pickles.
How did you meet him? Was he pickled at the time?
No, he wasn't old enough to be pickled when I met him.
How old do you have to be pickled? Well, how did you meet him?
Well, I met him in a blacksmith shop in Illinois. He was molding a brand for his pony, and he had heated the iron, and he had formed the letters M-A-X, and he put them in this big tub of water.
Max?
Because they were hot.
Was that the pony's name or your husband?
No, that was his name. He was going to brand his pony, Max.
What was the pony's name?
I don't know. I don't know.
Didn't the pony have a name?
Well, I didn't ask him. I don't
know. Don't you think it was rather unfair to the pony to...
I'm sorry. I should have asked the pony.
Well, there you are with the pony and Max and the...
I hadn't noticed my husband very much. I mean, he put the brand in the tub of water, and a devil's horse came flying by, and
What's that?
A devil's horse?
A devil's horse?
Uh-huh.
Was he getting shooed, too, in the black... What's a devil's horse?
Well, those huge varmints they have back east, they fly through the air, and they look like a little horse, only they're an insect. And if they bite you, it's just sure death, they say.
Who are they? I mean, I've always wanted to track that down, they say.
Well, that's what I've heard all my life. And I saw this coming at me, and I didn't like it. Well, I got excited, and I fell over in this tub of water on the top of this brand. And I got branded.
Isn't it a little embarrassing to walk around the bathing beach with Max stamped on you?
No, it really isn't noticeable at all.
So I still don't see how this culminated in marriage. The mere fact that you were named Max at the time. Matter of fact, all three of you were named Max by this time. But what about you, Eye Strain? I... What kind of a brand do you carry? Are you married?
Yes, I'm married.
Some hypnotist. She caught you napping, eh? Tell me, Svengali, what are some of the uses? What are some of the uses for hypnotism?
Well, it's being used a great deal medically today, especially through this last war. Mm-hmm. Such things as overcoming and removing phobias, bad habits.
Could you hypnotize me and cure me of my insomnia?
Yes.
Huh?
Yes, I think so.
I doubt it. I don't have insomnia. I just can't sleep at night, that's all. Could you hypnotize me and cure me of smoking cigars?
Well, any ordinary person you could hypnotize.
Answer my question. Can you hypnotize me?
Well, I don't know. I have to try it first.
Well, flattery will get you nowhere. I guess I'm safe in ordering another box of cigars. Can you show me how to hypnotize somebody? Try it on Mrs. Hughes here.
Sure, I'd be glad.
Mrs. Hughes, do you mind if he hypnotizes you?
Oh, I don't think I like that.
Oh, you don't want to give up smoking cigars either. Well, how do you hypnotize somebody? What's the first step?
Well, the first step is to get their attention, have them concentrate on your voice, and then have them think of figures or numbers. As you count, for instance, to five, they'll go deep asleep. Then you begin counting one, tell them to relax and grow heavy, their legs and their arms. Two, they're growing very...
Are you trying to give me the double whammy here?
Well, I wasn't trying very hard.
Can you hypnotize a whole audience?
A large portion of a whole audience. I did a demonstration at the Long Beach Municipal Auditorium several years ago. There were about 3,500 people there, and several hundred actually went to sleep.
Did it ever occur to you that perhaps the show was lousy? Well, now that everybody's in a trance, let's play You Bet Your Life for $1,000. You run your $20 and more than the other couples, and you get the big chance. I can't tell you how much our first couple won, but Fenneman's offstage to remind our listeners.
The expectant father and the mother of eight children won $210.
Here we go. Let's see how high you can build your $20. You selected American Patriots as your category. Is that right? Now, here's your first question. How much are the 20? Yes. What was the name of the American statesman who said, give me liberty or give me death?
Patrick Henry.
Patrick Henry is right.
They're on their way with $30.
Remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. How much of the 30 will you try?
25.
25. What was the name of the soldier and statesman who avenged the Alamo at San Jacinto?
Was it Sam Houston?
Sam Houston is correct.
They're on their way now. They have $55.
And here's your third question. And how much of the 55?
50.
What was the name of the patriot in charge of the Boston Tea Party? He also signed the Declaration of Independence.
Samuel Adams.
Samuel Adams is correct.
Now they have $105.
This gal has read a number of books. Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much is 105?
100.
100. What was the name of the woman who supposedly said, shoot if you must, this old gray head, but spare your country's flag? I'm terribly sorry. It was Barbara Fritchie. Well, that's tough luck. You bet all your money and wound up broke. I'm going to give you another chance to make some money. Get this one right and you win $10 in cash. Now, think hard. Who was buried in Grant's tomb? General Grant is right. Thanks and good luck from the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. And I will soon know who gets the chance at the $1,000 question.
Mr. Car Owner, what have you done about the warmer weather that lies ahead?
I'm sending my long underwear to storage.
But what about your car? Is it all set for the miles of pleasant motoring? Can you count on it for smooth operation on vacation and during those summer weekends? Better visit a DeSoto Plymouth dealer real soon. Let his service experts tune up your car.
Bring in your violin, too.
You see, friends, a car that's been checked by DeSoto Plymouth mechanics will zoom along the road and purr like a cat.
May even drink milk. So take the man's advice, folks. Bring your car, your violin, and your cat in wherever you see the sign of a DeSoto Plymouth dealer. All right, Fenneman, who's ahead in the battle for the $1,000 question?
Well, the mother of eight children and the expectant father are ahead with $210. And the secret word is still tree. We invited some boxers and some ballet dancers to the program tonight. And just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected Miss Patty Taylor and Mr. Art Aragon. And here they are, folks. Meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome, youngsters, for the DeSoto Plymouth dealers. And if you say the secret word, you'll divide $100 between you. It's a common word, something you see every day. A boxer and a ballet dancer, eh? Which are you?
I'm the boxer.
You're the boxer, huh? What is your name? Art Aragon, huh? Where are you from, Art?
I'm from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Oh. Before we proceed, let me caution you. On this program, you're liable to hear bells occasionally, Art. Don't come out swinging if you do. What is your fighting weight, Art?
135 stripped.
Did you say strapped or stripped? Now, how much do you weigh with your clothes on?
I don't know. I never weigh with my clothes on.
You must draw a nice crowd when you get weighed at the end. Are you married or haven't you lost a fight yet?
I'm married, but we don't fight at home.
You don't, huh? In the morning, does your wife have to count to nine before you'll get up? What about you, Twinkle Toes? Let's find out something about you. You're a ballet dancer, huh?
Yes.
Where are you from? What is your name? Fifi? Patty, huh?
Patty Taylor.
Are you married?
No, I'm not married.
You're not married, huh? For a ballet dancer, apparently you're not on your toes. Let's see you get up on your toes.
In these shoes? You need toes for that.
Oh, you have toes, eh?
About 10.
Did you say you were about 10?
No, 18 now.
Well, you just said 10.
10 toes.
Oh, 10 toes, but you're 18.
Yes.
It could be worse, you know. You could be 10 and have 18 toes. I knew a guy like that once. He was really two girls, but I don't want to. Now, one punch. How do you train for a big fight?
Well, let's see. I get up at 6:30 in the morning, I go run, I come back and I go to bed.
Wouldn't it be simpler to just stay there in the first place? Once you're up, why don't you stay up?
Well, that's not all of the training. I got a little bit more.
There is? What else?
Well, I get up at 10 o'clock and I eat my breakfast. Then I go back to bed.
You must have a fortune tied up in pajamas. Huh? Then what do you do?
Well, I go train the gym for a couple of hours, then I go home and go to bed. That's true. Then I get up at about 5 o'clock and I eat my dinner, go out and take a walk, and I come home and go to bed.
You don't see much of the outside world, do you? Why do you do all that work? Why is there so much sleeping and jumping up and down?
How do you want to get in top shape?
Top shape? Well, who wants to be shaped like a top? Now, what are the first things you have to learn about ballet, Patty?
Well, the first thing would be the five basic dance positions.
And what are the five basic dance positions?
1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Well, you ask a ridiculous question, you get a ridiculous answer. On the other hand, Aragon only has two positions. Vertical and horizontal. Could you describe the first dance position, Patty?
Well, position number one, you have your feet together, your heels together, and your toes pointed outwards and push your heels forward.
That sounds pretty simple. Okay. So what are some of the basic steps of the ballet?
Oh, there's tourjetés, pirouettes, glissades, assemblées, jetés, and entrechâtres.
What time do you stop at Nacogdoches? Isn't all that stuff Greek to you, Art?
It's French.
It's French. Well, all I can say is vive la France! What qualifications are necessary to become a good ballet dancer, Patty?
Well, most of the qualifications are physical. You should have a sturdy body and flexible and a slender figure. And it's good to have long legs, but it isn't necessary.
Well, the legs should certainly be long enough to reach the floor, Patty. Well, it's been very interesting talking to you two. Now, let's see how agile you are in the quiz. Now, you beat the other two couples, and you'll get a chance at the $1,000 DeSoto Plymouth question. I can't tell you how much the other two couples won, but Fenneman's offstage to remind our listeners.
The mother of eight children and the expectant father are ahead with $210.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. You select the sporting terms as your category. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. Now, how much you want to bet of the $20? Ten. Talk right out loud in the microphone. Like the fight was over and you were saying, hello, Mom. A Texas leaguer... is an expression in what sport?
Baseball.
Baseball is correct.
Run away, Groucho, with $30.
Well, you hit that over the fence. Remember, you're going for $1,000 tonight. Now, how much of the 30 will you try?
25, she said.
25. A lob shot is an expression of what sport? L-O-B.
Oh, wait just a moment. A lob. It's a tennis.
That's right, tennis.
Right now, we have $55.
You got $55, and here's your third question. How much will you bet?
40.
Riposte, I guess, R-I-P-O-S-T-E, is a maneuver in what sport?
Riposte. How do you spell it?
R-I-P-O-S-T-E.
You guess.
Riposte. Football?
No.
That's a tough question. It's fencing.
They now have $15.
That's a shame. All right, here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much of the 15 will you try?
All of it.
All of it. A stymie is an expression of what sport?
That's easy, huh? I'm stymied. No, not marvelous. I'm stymied. You stymied the guy. Gee, that's simple.
Stymied. Thought it was marbles.
Well, I was thinking of golf, but I guess they have stymies and marbles. But I'd say you're right.
They wind up with $30. And that means the expectant father and the mother of eight children with $210... get the chance at the DeSoto Plymouth $1,000 question. serve you efficiently, to serve you promptly. Those are the aims of every DeSoto Plymouth dealer. No matter what make of car you drive, no matter what sort of attention it needs, a DeSoto Plymouth dealer is well equipped to give your car the very best in service. Skilled, factory-trained mechanics, the most modern tools and equipment made, service at a fair price, and prompt, courteous treatment every time. That's the kind of service you get when you drive in at the sign of a DeSoto Plymouth dealer. That's the kind of service that means extra miles for your car. From coast to coast, there are more than 3,000 of these DeSoto Plymouth dealers, each with an earnest desire to serve you. And here is the mother of eight and the expectant father, the winning couple, all ready for the DeSoto Plymouth $1,000 question, Groucho.
Here we go for $1,000. Ready? I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on a single answer between you, so think carefully and please no help in the audience. Here it is. The Panama Canal, one of the great engineering feats of all time, would never have been possible if it weren't for the discovery of the Isthmus of Panama. For $1,000, tell me, who discovered the Isthmus of Panama? All right, what is the answer you two have decided upon?
Balboa.
No, I'm sorry, but it was Christopher Columbus on his last voyage to the New World. Well, that's the correct answer, so that means the big question next week will be worth $1,500. Well, you lost the big money, but you won $210 in the quiz. Congratulations, and thanks to both of you.
You Bet Your Life is a John Goodell production, transcribed from Hollywood, directed by Robert Dwan and Bernie Smith. Music by Jerry Fielding. Be sure to tune in again next Wednesday night at this time for the Groucho Marx Show, You Bet Your Life, presented by the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers of America. And remember, all dealers who sell DeSoto also sell Plymouth. Two great cars, both products of the Chrysler Corporation. And don't forget, next week the big question will be worth $1,500.
So good night, folks, and remember, just be sure to see your DeSoto Plymouth dealer.
Folks, here's a tip from the National Safety Council. May is National Car Safety Month. So remember, check your car, check accidents. This is George Fenneman, signing off for the more than 3,000 DeSoto Plymouth dealers from coast to coast.
Hey everyone, thank you for tuning in, and I hope you'll come back next week. Please stay safe and do all the stuff that the CDC says for you to do, and so you will be back next week, because it means a lot to me. In fact, it means the world to me. Thank you.